south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start off by talking about things that really seem to piss the wokesters and militant vaxxers off. We'll start by reading this email from listener Patty. She says, Johnny, so how does one get into Guatemala without a vaccine? Which begs the question, how do you get into any country that demands a vax if you aren't and you want to get in there? Well, now I'm going to tell you a couple things that I don't necessarily recommend. I'm just telling you what some free-spirited gringos and expats who feel mandates are an affront to personal rights and liberties. That's how I feel too. So, Patty, here's what certain gringos and expats in that situation have been known to do. Again, I'm not recommending you do this, but remember the name of this show, The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And here we cover everything and anything gringos and expats do while living down here. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. Where have I heard that before? Anyway, here's how some people do it. Once again, how an unvaxxed person can get into a country that's got vaccine mandates. Shouldn't be possible, right? But it's happening all the time. And let's use Patty's Guatemala example. It's a country where you have to get vaxxed to get in. However, if you're a gringo or expat who's got permanent residency, that is, if you have one of those little cédula cards, it's that little ID card with a chip that doesn't work, issued to every citizen and permanent resident of most all Latin countries. So if you've got that card, you're not required to be vaxxed. You just need that brutal stick-up-your-nose antigen test. Which makes you wonder if the nurses who do that ever skewer a booger ball, shish kebab style. Hey, don't tell me that doesn't happen. It's just math, statistics, and probabilities, man. Don't tell me your nasal passages are always crystal clear. Come to think of it, man, what a job. How would you like shoving pointy sticks up people's noses all day? It hurts just thinking about it. But I digress, man, did I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. How to get an unvaxxed person into a country that requires a vax, like Guatemala or Panama, Colombia, Costa Rica, and probably 80% of all the other countries in the world, too. Well, you just heard one way, being a resident, and it's completely legal. But let me guess, you don't have residency, right? And you know, ever since I've been doing this show, over 11 years now, I've been hammering and hammering on this idea that you just have to get residency in a Latin American country. It's getting harder and harder, and the window of opportunity is closing. The question is, how many of you have followed through and pulled the trigger on that? Well, I'm not going to scold you procrastinators. But now, as you see, not having residency can come back to haunt you. But back to the point. Certain unvaxxed gringos and expats will fly into a country that doesn't require a vax, like Mexico. On arrival, phone up their Latino lawyer and lay out a hypothetical situation. What if a person who isn't vaxxed wants to get in a country like Guatemala that requires a vax? Remember, it's a hypothetical question now. Well, in most cases, your lawyer can't do anything about that. He's a lawyer. But he'll know a guy who knows a guy who might know another guy. And that other guy will generally be a doctor or a nurse who also doesn't believe in mandates. But they work at hospitals and clinics and do the job they're paid to do. However, as far as their real feelings, their lips are sealed. And most of them aren't vaxxed either, but technically, they are. You following me? You wouldn't believe how many doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals here in Latin America are not at all on board with this mandated vax thing. But just like the ones who feel the same up in the States, they keep their mouths shut because they know if they blab, they'll get canceled or fired. In fact, there really is a higher percentage of doctors and nurses down here who are not on board with that mandate than up in the States. I'm talking percentage-wise now. Why? Because ever since this pandemic started, they've been using those two evil banned stateside drugs, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Yeah, you can get it in every pharmacy without a prescription. They've been using it since day one. And there's no dickhead healthcare guru in charge like Doctor with a K, Fauci, telling them they can't use it under penalty of losing their licenses. The fact is, down here in Latin America, there are no expensive alternative big pharma drugs, the kind they pump into COVID-positive people when they end up in the hospital in the States. For one thing, even if they had those drugs down here, people just could never afford them. Remember, only about 5 to 10% of the people here in Latin America have private health care insurance. And the rest of the population are enrolled in those pathetic free national health care systems, where doctors are told to bring their own gloves and disposables because the government doesn't have enough money to keep the public hospitals supplied. Though in truth, it's not that the government doesn't have enough money. They have the dough allotted every year, all right, but crooks are operating within the hospital supply chain, and they steal a good percentage of that stuff before it even ends up getting inventoried. In fact, not a week goes by when I don't read about some kind of national healthcare scandal. Funny thing is, though, you almost never read stories like that about the private healthcare system. Wonder why that is. And that's how the national healthcare systems have always been, way before the COVIDiot crisis. And if you don't believe it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a photo I took while in the doctor's lounge at a public national healthcare hospital. It's a picture of a sign on the doctor's bulletin board that says, "Attention all visiting doctors. You must please bring your own gloves and disposables. There is a shortage and there are not enough to go around." Nice, huh? I guess that applies to patients too. And that photo was taken about a year and a half before the COVIDiot crisis. So what I'm saying once again is that the national healthcare hospitals throughout Latin America, which serve 90% or more of the population, they just do not stock and never did those new expensive big pharma drugs to treat things like advanced COVID. I don't know if you've been keeping up on this, but there are some new drugs for COVID developed by those thieves at Big Pharma, once called Remdesivir. It costs $4,000 for a 5-day treatment, and apparently it's extremely toxic too. Well, again, they just don't have those kind of drugs down here in Latin America. What for when down here they've got ridiculously cheap drugs that actually work? Instead, doctors treat it with super cheap, commonly used drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. In fact, some Latin governments are passing out little COVID kits to every single Latin household. And those kits have inside of them hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, ivermectin, zinc, and 2 bean burritos. Got your attention there, didn't I? All right, so they don't give you the burritos. That would have been the icing on the cake, though, huh? In fact, about 2 years ago when this COVIDiot thing first hit, nobody knew what to do. I was speaking to my seminar logistics lady, Rita, concerning how we were going to organize the next seminar with all this COVIDiot crap and the lockdowns. And she told me her father, who is a Guatemalan surgeon, was having great success along with many, many other Latin American doctors with this stuff called ivermectin, a drug that's been around for a long time and had been used for years for treating parasites. And she sent me a photo of a box of that stuff. Now, I've never heard of it before, and I never once heard it mentioned in the first world lamestream media till about 3/4 of a year later. So it took almost a year for you guys up from the first world to even hear about this stuff. Of course, the billion-dollar big pharma PR departments made sure doctors up by you couldn't prescribe the stuff. They dissed it, called it horse dewormer, and said it was totally ineffective. Meanwhile, in Latin America, doctors and governments are handing it out like crazy. In fact, I just bought a box of 100 just to have around the house. It cost me $40. And 100 pills, each one 6 milligrams, enough for 6 complete 5-day COVIDiot treatments. Now, the cool thing that most people don't know is that if you just take one of those little ivermectin pills a week, new stats are showing it can knock out those so-called long COVID symptoms. You know, people who've already had COVID, but it seems to be lingering week after week. So you heard right, 1 6-milligram pill a week to knock out long COVID. And each one of those pills, my cost anyway, around 50 cents. Yep, you heard it, 50 cents. Now, I took a couple of seminar attendees to a local pharmacy in El Salvador. Some picked up some ivermectin in Guatemalan pharmacies too. Almost everyone at the seminar wanted to pick up some of that stuff and bring it home. And we found, depending on the pharmacy, the prices were all over the place. For example, if you wanted the brand name ivermectin, we're talking about 6-milligram pills now. That's pretty standard. It was $100 for 24 pills. However, for the generic ivermectin brand, it was $50 for 24 pills, half the price of the brand name. That was still $2 a pill. Now, you heard me say I paid 50 cents a pill for my batch. Well, I picked those up when I was at the stem cell clinic with my brother in the DR. But still, even at $2 or $4 a pill, an entire treatment is 15 6-milligram pills, a 5-day treatment. Even at $4 a pill, that's only $60. You could drop more than that on date night at Sizzler. But we were talking about unvaxxed gringos getting into vaxxed Latin American countries. How do you do that? Well, like I said, gringos are flying into unvaxxed countries, hooking up with their lawyers, explaining the situation, and the lawyer generally knows a guy who might know another guy. But I gotta warn you, you can't just walk into any old lawyer's office and lay that out on him. You better be a client of a lawyer you've been dealing with on a regular basis. Because if you're dealing with a lawyer you've just met, he's not going to stick his neck out for someone he just met. He's not going to give you his special contacts. He'll likely play it straight and above board. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say that Latin American lawyers can bend the law to near the breaking point. And in the end, it's almost always perfectly legal or legal enough. But in this case, we're talking about something completely different. So your lawyer, although he might know a guy who knows a guy, he might make the introductions, but he's not going to get involved. Like Pontius Pilate, he'll hand you over and wash his hands. Like Sergeant Schultz on Hogan's Heroes, if asked, he knows nothing. Oh, and we're talking about 100% verified, registered in the system vax cards now, as opposed to fake vaccine cards, a lot of which are floating around right now. The thing is, if you've got a fake vaccine card and it's all filled out correctly, there's no international system or database that could actually check if it's been registered. But that's not to say a system like that isn't coming. That's why I don't recommend you try that. Now, first, it'll be in databases on a country-to-country basis. The U.S. will have their database, Canada, the European Union, Colombia, Argentina, they'll all have their databases. But still, if you know anything how governments work, especially third world governments, it'll be virtually impossible to link all those systems together. And then there's that medical privacy issue, too. Anyway, as far as a worldwide vax database, that'll be a long time coming. The first big hurdle being that many countries have their own languages. Think of it. Russia's database will be in Russian, Turkey's in Turkish, Serbia's in Serbian, Brazil, Portuguese, Mexicans speaking Mexican. Isn't that funny? So many gringos and expats I know actually say things like, I've been to Mexico, but I don't speak Mexican. In a way, it's a kind of a gringo IQ test. Then again, if you've ever been to Mexico, you know the Spanish they speak on the street is not very close to the formal written word. Then again, up in the States, ghetto speak is pretty much in the same boat. Anyway, getting back to the fact that it's going to be very difficult to have a worldwide vax database. Can you see the problem here? What a massive amount of work it'll take to link those systems up. And what about the fact there are around 200 countries in the world with at least 75 different languages? All right, continuing on this subject of fake vaccine cards. You know, in many of the cities and towns on the gringo tourist trail here in Latin America, expats find each other and congregate into little like-minded groups. And in all those gringoized areas, there are English language expat journals and blogs and twaddle and Facebook groups, etc., etc. And if you check or monitor those sites, you'll see there are always a small group of loudmouth gringos and gringas dominating those sites, dominating the conversations, whining, complaining, trying to get that 15 minutes of fame just bloviating away. Almost all of them proving the point that the most beautiful sound in the world is the sound of your own voice. Hey, wait a minute. What am I saying? I'm ripping on exactly what I do. Anyway, to show you just how bad it can get when you're on the gringo tourist trail, you don't speak Spanish and you're stuck reading the local gringo rag or fake book site or blog. Let's take, for example, one of those gringo-wised towns, Cuenca, Ecuador. Yep, they got a couple of different English language gringo publications and rags. Now, there's a recent opinion piece that came out on February 10th in this little rag that I'm looking at right now. There's a frequent gringo bloviator on that site named Agnes Edwards. Now, get this. Agnes encourages expats to report those who sell or use fake vaccine cards in Ecuador. She relishes the prospect that violators will spend years in prison or, in case of expats, be deported. The problem is that with her advice, that mandate in Ecuador for vaccine cards expired on January 22nd. Vax cards in Ecuador? No longer required. In fact, they were only required for 1 month, beginning in December. And then it was for stores, restaurants, offices, and government buildings. A few businesses still request those certificates, but most don't. It's not mandatory anymore. And I would guess not even legal for them to ask you to produce such a card. Anyway, obviously, Agnes, the frequent bloviator on this site, is not aware that Cuenca's health ministry mandate disappeared on December 23rd. Though it looks like she still wants people with fake vaccine cards to go to jail or get deported. What a retard. And during that month of December when it was in effect, A total of 6 people were caught for presenting fake cards. None of those cases have been prosecuted, and no charges filed. In fact, interviewing an Ecuadorian judge, he says that he's unaware of any arrests in the entire country for fake vaccine cards. And he says even if there were arrests for fake cards, the people would be unlikely to be prosecuted since the mandate has been lifted, adding that there is a backlog of, quote, real crimes awaiting adjudication. And real crimes, he says, obviously take priority over hanging offenses like fake vaccine cards. The judge also said that the policy of government offices that did require proof of vaccination and still require in some cases to give warning to those it suspects of showing fake cards. He said if they suspect fake cards, they'll only issue a warning because they don't have time to conduct an internet search on the health ministry's system. But here's the real kicker. He says another problem is the health ministry's system and health database, more often than not, is down or malfunctioning. Oh, Latin America, you gotta love it. Now, that doesn't vindicate what I said earlier about trying to get all the systems linked together. Well, you be the judge. Oh, and by the way, this Agnes fool that frequently bloviates in this weekly English language Ecuador rag, she not only called on gringos and expats to turn in people with fake cards, she's also calling for expats who refuse to get vaxxed to be fined. Man, she's just the kind of idiot expat we don't want coming down here. We get all kinds, but thankfully, the more brain-dead and idiotic types end up on the gringo tourist trail. You see, on the gringo tourist trail, they can find like-minded idiots, whereas off the gringo tourist trail, there's just not enough of us gringos and expats to even want to stick our big noses in anyone else's business. That's one of the big reasons, you know, I just don't like the gringo tourist trail much. Somehow, I think those same blabbermouths that lead those expat fake book groups were the same kids on student council in high school that you couldn't stand. Isn't it funny how they always bring down their worst first world habits and try to impose them on others? No thanks. As for me, I prefer to be off the tourist trail and remain anonymous, or at least as low-key as possible. Besides that, I don't know about you, but I never was much of a joiner. Bottom line, if your plan B is to be on the gringo tourist trail, which is okay for an initial soft landing, but man, I guarantee you will meet some gringos and gringos you just want to punch in the face. Sometimes when I meet these people, I wonder, why in the hell did you ever come down here in the first place? When most of us leave to get away from all the stupid and disastrous things that are happening up in the States, there are a certain number of gringos, especially retired teachers and government workers, who want to bring all that stuff down here to Latin America. Hey, don't take my word for it. Just visit Costa Rica, Cuenca, Ecuador, Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Puerto Vallarta, Tulum, any of the gringoized towns and cities in Mexico. Oh, and for a taste of the worst of everything back home, just check out any gringo expat bar. Ask around, and you'll find one. There's one or more in every medium and large-sized Latin city, whether you're on or off the gringo tourist trail. Now, speaking about how expats with a plan B pile into a place and eventually ruin it. Prime example, Costa Rica. What I mean by ruined is changed for the worst in many ways. Obviously, you end up with gringo prices, but that's not the worst of it. To me, the worst of it is the psychological damage done to the locals. How we end up just being dollar signs to them. Gullible people with money eager to get gouged. Yep, it's true. The more the gringos pile in, the more the locals become jaded. Well, you know, that doesn't happen overnight. Which reminds me of a little story. You know, when I first got down to Costa Rica, 30 years ago or so now, I moved into a really nice high-rise residential tower. It was really a class joint with just 4 apartments on each floor. To give you an example of the kind of people who lived in that tower, well, the Swiss ambassador to Costa Rica was my next-door neighbor. Basically, I was the riffraff in the building. Now, when I first got there and was looking for a cleaning lady, I asked my lawyer who to hire. He said he'd ask his longtime cleaning lady to find one for me, someone vetted and trusted. And I said, well, how much did you pay your cleaning lady? He says, $15 a day for an 8-hour day. Remember, that was 30 years ago. So then that same week, the Swiss ambassador invited me over, you know, milk and cookies, meet the neighbors and all that. And as we were talking and he was showing me his African trophies, he was a big game hunter and had an entire room full of zebra and antelope heads. Man, that stuff would not go down today. I know, pretty gross, but that was 30 years ago. He even had 2 end tables made out of the actual feet of an elephant. Yeah, he was a proud bungalow Bill, all right. Now, even back then, that was pretty disgusting. Anyway, the subject worked its way around to cleaning ladies, and he said his cleaning lady only worked 2 days a week at his place, and if I'd like to hire her, once or twice a week, she had a couple of days free. Now, remember, we had exactly the same size apartments, around 1,200 square feet. And I said, well, how much does she get a day? He says, oh, you pay her by the hour. I said, how much? He said, $6 an hour. And I said, I'll think about it. Well, I did think about it for about 2 seconds, long enough to calculate that this guy was paying his cleaning lady $48 a day, and my lawyer was paying his $15 a day. And that Swiss guy, what did he care? He was a diplomat, and his government was picking up all the expenses, so he didn't care if it was $100 a day. And that, my friends, is how gringo prices slowly escalate as tourist trail countries just load up with gringos and expats. Like I said, it's a slow process, but fairly predictable. Tourist trail towns and countries like Costa Rica go through a number of stages before they become first world expensive and there are no real estate deals to be had anymore. And of course, the locals become so jaded, they only look upon you as a dollar sign. So how does that happen? What's the progression? Usually, the adventurous backpacker public discover a tiny gem of a paradise first. You could call that the adventurer phase. During that phase, the destination attracts people who will go anywhere, as long as it's cheap. And there are things to do that are free or don't cost much at all, like hiking, rafting, bird watching, and volcano climbing. And of course, before a place really hits the tourist trail, adventurous backpackers and cheapskate travelers will not care if there's any perceived danger. Oh, and early on, before a destination hits mainstream, there will be a lot of travelers who are hiding from lawsuits, ex-wives, the IRS, AWOL from the military, etc., etc. Then comes the next stage, the early investor stage. After the backpackers and adventurous types have kind of proven the place out and word spreads, people that have been down there and passed through start to see that the place is catching on, but it's got a pretty shaky infrastructure. That is, no big franchise, first-world hotels, etc. That means middle and upper-class tourists are not traveling there yet because they want comfortable accommodations. Now, this is the stage when those expat rags aren't even mentioning it yet. No international living, top 10, or even top 100 picks. Nary a mention at all. Though backpacker journals and rags are picking up on it. Then some of the cheaper first-world franchise eating joints start arriving, like Subway. That's a fast-food franchise with one of the cheapest startup costs. In fact, last time I checked, there are over 50 Subway franchises in Guatemala City, which is way off the tourist track, and you can get one for 40 Gs. Then, of course, sooner or later, the more disgusting fast food franchises arrive. Kentucky Fried, Burger King, McDonald's, and the infrastructure is starting to shape up. And that's when those overseas retirement rags like AARP start talking about how cheap it is to retire in a place like that. And suddenly, the local doctors, clinics, and hospitals are seeing more and more gringos. And as soon as hospitals and clinics start offering gringos health care insurance plans, more and more small-time investors arrive to buy cheap land and very affordable vacation homes. But note, at this point, almost none of the locals speak English. So still, it's more or less adventurous gringos and expats coming down. And it's not a family affair yet. And at this point, land and real estate are still at bargain basement prices. Then, after a few short years, comes the next big phase. Expat rags like International Living start talking about it. Still not on their top 10 list, but moving on up with a bullet. The country's government starts taking notice of it as a possible gringo tourist destination. They post a few tourist cops in an information center, even if it's a little storefront window or corner hut, and the place starts taking on an identity and a life of its own. And suddenly, and this is a turning point in that phase, a weekly or monthly magazine or two pops up, strictly in English, published by and for gringos and expats. Then, little by little, come the boutique gringo shops, mom-and-pop hotels, Airbnbs, and eateries. With new tourists and visitors coming through, seeing opportunity niches. They are the risk-takers that don't have enough money to start a brick-and-mortar business from scratch in the States, but find they could have a similar dream in Latin America. By the way, the number one reason a business fails, whether it's in the States or down in Latin America, is a shortage of working capital. That is, when the place finally opens, the owner's out of cash and doesn't have the extra working capital to get him through the next 3 to 6 months. But you knew that already, right? Hey, I know what it's like. There was a time when I was young, stupid, and had more optimism than money. Anyway, after enough mom-and-pop boutique gringo businesses move in, the place is on the map as a recognized new cultural entity. But there are still loads of opportunities for expat entrepreneurs, catering to other new expats that show up more and more. And that's the point when newcomer gringos and expats can survive without knowing Spanish, and without ever becoming part of the local community, which is kind of sad. There comes a time that in that town there are enough gringos so that they could hang out exclusively with other gringos. And then, as more and more gringos settle in, they start splintering off into separate gringo communities, online and otherwise, including a lot of idiotic gringo expat Facebook groups. In fact, Expat Eddie says if he has any doubts as to whether he's actually on or off the gringo tourist trail after landing in a town he's never been in before, he says he picks up a local English tourist rag. And if, after checking the classified ads, they've got AA meetings in English, he knows the place has been gringoized. By that time, there are no real estate deals to be found. That's when you also might notice some well-groomed, gentrified hippie types driving nice 4x4s, even Range Rovers. Why? Because they were the lucky early adapters that came in 5 or 10 years earlier, with not much more than their backpacker gear and not much of a nest egg. Little did they know way back when, but they got in on the ground floor. And that 10 or 20 grand they paid for that dilapidated little corner off of the Central Park is worth 10 times that now, and their lease is golden. Oh, and when one of those little towns catches on with retirees, when AARP and International Living start to pump up the place as an international retirement destination, look out. Like, for example, in 2008, when International Living tapped Cuenca, Ecuador as the world's number one retirement destination. Well, that's when the gringo and Latino hucksters, snake oil salesmen, con artists, etc., moved in and started to ply their trade on green gringos. They know that expat retirees, some with lots of dough, are easily bamboozled. When that happens in a gringoized town, all you have to do is walk into an expat bar and you'll hear people talking about 14% interest rates, various coffee, teak, and avocado farm investment deals. You'll hear people talking about gold, silver, and emerald mining investments. And at that point, you'll start hearing about many gringo expat retirees often being gouged by trusted gringos. They'll head back to Cleveland, tail between their legs, blaming Latin America for their failures instead of their own greed and gullibility. Now, I know that won't happen to you. You're not one of those, because if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you're getting an overdose of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. That's why I always say you should pay special attention to the ugly, so it doesn't happen to you. South
of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.